Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Casterbris podcast with a K with me, Christian Corley. I've been looking through the records on the website and you know, on iTunes and all the other places. And apparently this is podcast number, embrace yourselves, 337. Which means it is, and it's 2019, so it's 12 years, around about this sort of time of year, since we did the very first podcast with a K with me and Brian Terranova. So I thought, let's have Brian on. Hiya!
Hey!
How are you doing?
Back.
Hey!
Hey, can't complain. It's nice.
That's exciting. I'm excited.
Good to be back. Right?
Yeah.
Nice to hear your voice again. It's been too long.
It has been a long time.
I mean, we've chatted, but like via email and so on. So this way people, you know, get the thing. You don't really hear voice in email. Odd, I know, but there you go.
No, that's strange they didn't factor that in, isn't it?
Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah, totally.
What were they thinking?
So, Brian is obviously a Doctor Who fan. He's recorded
little known fact.
A little known fact. You've been on over half the podcast with a K. And... you also cosplay as the 10th Doctor.
Yes. Yes. I took a little break, but I kind of got back into it more recently.
These are things that regular listeners to the podcast with the K will know. But what they may not know is quite how obsessed you are about sonic screwdrivers.
Yeah, it's just a tad, you know, no more than anyone else, I'd say. Or maybe a little bit more fanatical, crazy. I don't know. Too much, perhaps.
Do you think it's too much?
No.
Well, there
I mean,
you go.
Like, look, in all honesty, no. I mean, if something is your hobby and you take enjoyment from it and your time is well spent doing that rather than you walking away going, man, I've just wasted hours doing that, then no, of course not. No, it's all good fun. You know, it's neat. It's really actually just like, it's very interesting delving into the history of things, be it like the history of a war or the history of the evolution of cars or something like that, just as much as it is for this. It's there's always surprising factors or just like thought processes along the way that you just sit there and go, that's incredible. Like, I wouldn't have thought of that, or that's interesting. I didn't know that before, kind of thing, you know, and new discoveries, even if obviously somebody has already known them because they built the thing. Are just fun, you know. It's fun. It's fun expanding the mind in any way.
Okay, that's fair enough. I wouldn't disagree with any of that. I was on a side note. I've been doing some family tree research, specifically into my grandfather.
Wow.
Who,
cool.
Yeah. Well, he fought in World War II, but he never spoke of it, and he died like 23 years ago. So far too late for me to even attempt to ask. And it turned out he was in most of the war. He was in the Durham Light Infantry. So I googled the Durham Light Infantry, and would you believe there was a photo of my granddad? And it wasn't like a lineup of a load of troops. It was my granddad, another guy, and a US para stood having a cigarette in North Africa.
That's a small troop right there.
Well, yeah. But yeah, so...
no, that's pretty awesome.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, you do get nice little surprises when you start researching something and getting in-depth with things. So, before we continue, a quick addendum to what is to follow. During the conversation you're about to hear, Brian Terranova uses the accidental Jadoon pronunciation for Brian Uyghur's name. He said Brian Uyghur, and obviously he meant the traditional Axonite pronunciation of Brian Uyghur. As you were, carry on. Enjoy. Now, many of you may be listening to this because you've heard about or read Brian's rather remarkable, I think, 30-page examination of the Russell T. Davies era sonic screwdrivers. Now, when Brian told me he'd done this, I was thinking maybe 10, 12 pages at a push. But I mean, it's a compiled history, which is in so much detail. I mean, I basically feel like it should be on newsstands. It's so good. And we're kind of loosely going to talk about it, but I mean, I honestly don't know where to start. You've obviously sourced a lot of material from all over the place. I mean, on the first page, you've got the rather, I don't know if it's the right word for, it's not the right word for me, for a phallic shaped object, but sexy pictures, sexy diagrams right. by Dan Walker of the, RTD era's Sonic Screwdriver's sort of evolution.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot here. I just want to know, why did you start doing this and when?
So it mostly dates back to around like 2004 with me. And I know, like, bear with me here. I know the new series came out in 2005. But basically, as a kid, I loved the show. Tom Baker was my doctor, and I always wanted one of his sonic screwdrivers, that and a police box. And I never thought I'd ever have either. And here I am today, and I have both. Okay. But in 2004, I joined a prop forum called the RPF, and there was a run of fan-made Fourth Doctor sonic screwdrivers. And I bought one because I finally could have this thing that I wanted ever since I was a kid, this dream item. And once you have it, there's like this mix of excitement, like, wow, I finally have this thing. This is my childhood. And I'm holding a piece of it in my hands here. This is so great. You know, now I can run around like an idiot pretending I'm the doctor unlocking things with this sonic screwdriver and whatnot. But as time progressed, as you have it, you start to go, okay, well, like, this is awesome. I want to get more pictures of like Tom Baker holding this thing. And you start to look at it and you start to notice the details that are off on it, because there's no known information. There's no known specs on the piece. In fact, the actual sonic screwdriver that Tom Baker used went missing from the BBC, from John Nathan Turner's desk, sometime in the 80s. So, you know, the only photos of it are pictures of it in use on film, for the most part, anyway. So then, you know, like, I started researching that, and I started, like, not just me, like, tons of fans online to try and get another replica made that was a little bit more exacting. But then comes Doctor Who, 2005, Christopher Eccleston. And very shortly after, it really wasn't that long after Series 1 began airing, a photograph of one of the props that he used, and he had used multiple in his first series. Well, technically, he used two, although there's three versions of it, which you'll understand when you read the article. But there was a photo of the Gray Aztec. And I remember my friend Carson and I just looking at this thing and saying, like, well, there's another one we got to get. And, like, we fell in love with this piece. Like, and for a long time, we both tried to find as much information as we could on this thing, as did the online prop community, even just the fan community. Even if you weren't interested in building one, some fans were just interested in photos of it. They want to know what it looked like. You know, they could draw it in their artwork and so on. So really, all this started 2004, 2005. But over the years, as I collected more and more replicas, I wanted more and more data, more and more research to make these replicas as accurate as I could. This particular article that you just released on Beyond Casterbris, I technically started writing that article a year ago, even though it was kind of an expansion on written history that I had already done for my own purposes that I could, like, post when I posted kind of pictures of my replicas. So people had facts, not only what is this replica, but a little bit of a history on the replica. And the reason for that is because a friend of mine, and I might butcher the last name because I realize I've never actually heard it pronounced, but Brian Ugia, damn, he's going to kill me for that, I'm sure. He bought the Aztec handle from a private owner in 2018. So we're going back, like, this span back to early 2018. And when he got that in his hands, well, before actually even he got that in his hands, he wanted to research and make sure that it was correct, that it actually was the Aztec sonic screwdriver. And you know, it's a very difficult thing to do with certain pieces to match them to the screen. But what we found was that the crackle paint on the handle matched that 2004 photograph that Carson and I had become obsessed with during Series 1. Which just tells you, like, A, this prop is 100% the actual handle that was used on the one that Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant used, but B, they never painted this thing during its entire 3 years of use in the show, which was just, like, an exciting fact, too, because it's, like, that means that There variance wise, there were no paint scheme variants for this prop, but also we've just proved the lineage, much like you finding that photo of your grandfather. Here we just found actual proof this thing was indeed in this show. So this article that went out on the K a year ago, that's been in the works for a year.
Wow. There's a massive amount of detail in here. I mean, the bit that you've just described so well there, I mean, that sort of comes in around page 12. But before that, you got the designs that I mentioned earlier. And I wonder if you've ever, I mean, have you come across the reasons for instance, the legs not opening or the emitter ends not bending or anything like that? Has that information come to light?
So there's various stories on official words versus speculation. And unfortunately, Aztec Model Makers, the company who actually made the original props used by Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant, and that's the reason why we call them the Aztecs, because the model company was called, or rather the props company was called Aztec Model Makers. Supposedly, they had come out and said some information, but it's very difficult to confirm with them because, unlike a lot of other prop makers that I was able to get a hold of, they don't seem to respond. And that's fair. If you were inundated with questions from fans all day long, you'd do nothing but answer them. You wouldn't get your work done. So I can't blame them, you know. But the word is, the theory is, and supposedly the truth of it is that the head bending and the legs opening, there was just not a sufficient way to make that function in the prop that would make the prop, A, look well on film, and B, kind of stop the prop from basically having a lot of breakage issues, which it did. Apparently, the stories are that also Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant were both rather harsh on the props, kind of the same way like Tom Baker was. So in effect, it was just because they couldn't find a way to actually make it function sufficiently and still keep the look of the prop the way that they want it. It would be too fragile, in essence. So they kind of dropped one of the features, which was the tilting head, but they kept the other feature where essentially the legs were supposed to expand so that it could be a tripod, so that the sonic could be a hands-free aspect. They lost that, but the legs were also supposed to expand so that it could plug into the TARDIS console as a charging port for the sonic. They kept that function. They just didn't make the legs expand. They just created a different kind of port for the sonic to charge in the TARDIS console, which you can see in Christopher Eccleston's era, and then they kind of like never use it again.
Okay. It's funny looking at the close-ups from the Sound of Drums and Human Nature. You can see that kind of that bit where you could see them. It's still there in the design. The actual appears to be there in the design. You know the where it's going to bend, but obviously it doesn't bend. It's just looks like what it has a sort of universal joints that just doesn't do anything.
Yeah. So they gave the prop the look from the design, which is that ball end that the head would technically pivot on. So it was such a unique kind of look, and it still worked out rather well. Most of the replicas out there that do this prop, basically that caged head, the emitter cage with the four struts, that screws on to a threaded piece that then just rests on that ball joint. And then you kind of start to understand from there why that ball joint couldn't function. If you gave that ball joint function, you'd have to have it as two half spheres that had a connecting ability in the center so that it could pivot on those two half spheres. But if you did that, then the wires themselves would either have no place to travel, or they would have a lot of breakage issues. The more that you bent the head, the more you'd bend the wires, the more you'd fracture the wires. So it was kind of a logistics kind of thing where they couldn't get that ball joint to function properly and allow space for the wires, but they also, if they did, you'd be replacing those wires quite often. You'd have to be repairing the sonics on set quite often.
Sure. What in the process of doing of compiling this, what's been the standout piece of information for you?
So the standout moment probably would have had to have been when Brian bought the Aztec handle. Aside from, as I had mentioned before, where it proved that the prop had never been repainted before, which was massive because, you know, there's a lot of repaints on some of the classic props, and we wanted to know those kind of details, and everybody likes to have variations of the replicas in their collection. It just made a whole bunch of other like pieces fall into place, basically. So, like I said, you were saying that Dan Walker's artwork was the first thing that kind of started the article. The very next thing is the Colony Cream Aztec, which actually was the first new series Sonic Screwdriver to be used in the show. So they used that during recording block one. When I got that information from Brian that this handle just had never been repainted, that started me thinking, because a lot of the theories were that that cream Aztec, which was seen early on in the show, but not later on in the show, was that the theory was basically that the Sonic was repainted gray later on. And then that was the changes. And it was like, were there two Aztecs and one was painted cream, one was gray, and then they painted both gray to match, which was the theory for a long time. But as I looked into it more, all of a sudden, not only did that gray handle say that this one gray Aztec that Tennant and Eccleston used for like 3 years in the show was indeed the same Aztec prop for 3 years of the show, virtually no changes. There were a few, and we can talk about those. But that cream Aztec kind of, it had alterations of its own. So a lot of fans believe that this other prop that we used to just simply call the wide slider was a later addition to the series one filming, and that they made this prop. And when I say wide slider, what that means is that the body had this large channel cut into it so that the emitter head section could slide up and down with the thumb, so that Christopher Eccleston basically could have more kind of ability with the prop on set, that if he wanted a longer or shorter emitter length during the recording, he could have access to it. So for many years, we thought that it was a prop of its own. And there were some particularities to that prop that were known, which were the grub screws that held the collar and the end piece in place were placed on the side rather than the back, which is what we had previously known from the gray Aztec and we had assumed for the cream Aztec. But instead, I decided for years I had been going through and I had been screen capping every shot that the Sonic Screwdriver was in the show. Even if it was kind of a long shot, I'm trying to find out which one may have been used. And believe it or not, even if he's like holding it in a very particular way, there are some really great tells that you can figure out which Sonic Screwdriver is being used per scene. Some of them are difficult, some of them are easy. But when I did that, I came across a shot in Aliens of London, which was part of recording block one of series one. It was one of the three episodes where the cream Aztec was used, and it was only used in three episodes. And I came across a shot when he's lying underneath the TARDIS console, the whole Mickey Ricky scene kind of thing. And he holds the Sonic Screwdriver in such a way that I suddenly realized those grub screws are not on the back of that Colony cream Aztec. They're on the side. And then it just like hit me like a ton of bricks kind of thing. Like, wow, wait a minute. If those things are on the side and that Sonic Screwdriver is only ever seen in those three episodes, and then the very next recording block, that wide slider prop entered the show, that tells me that the Colony Cream Aztec, they didn't just get rid of it. Why would they get rid of it? Why would they never use it again? It doesn't make any sense. You know, that there's absolutely no reason not to use a good viable prop like that. So what they did was they actually altered that prop to become the wide slider prop, which I now call the wide slider Aztec, because now we know it was an Aztec prop. So it just getting that handle body alone confirmed that Sonic Screwdriver, confirmed the Colony Cream Aztec, told us that there were only ever two Aztecs used, and you can track this throughout recording series one through three, and that one of them had become altered to become this different prop that fans had known as the wide slider. They did kind of repaint that body. Obviously, if you're going to cut into it, you do a lot of damage, so you'd have to repaint it. And so that was probably the biggest thing for me, because it finally confirmed for us how many Aztecs there were. Mm-hmm. Although there's the current theory even that I have right now is that there were spare parts for these Aztecs. You know, when the company made the props, they probably had a couple of parts left over, because it does potentially explain a sonic screwdriver that came on, later on down the road.
Keep talking.
Yep. But with the inability to actually be able to speak with Aztec model makers, I can't get the proof of that I want. You know, I wish that they would answer messages, at least just one. You know, like I kind of wish in many respects that this project was like an official BBC project that I was working on, so it could open more doorways to actually speak with people. The beautiful thing that I just got actually this morning, I received a message from Nick Roboto, who I had sent my article to. And for those of you who don't know, I know Christian knows because we did an interview with him. Sure, Nick Roboto has worked on Doctor Who since 2004 as a prop maker. And then at some point he went, I think 2010, he went and did his own thing and became his own props company, Roberto Props. But he still worked on Doctor Who, and he's been responsible for making the sonic screwdrivers ever since Tennant's last season, series 4. So he knows the histories pretty well, because he used to have to care for the Aztec sonic screwdrivers, and he actually even used parts of them to make David Tennant's. So when I sent him the write-up, I just wanted to see, you know, what he thought, because he was pretty instrumental in giving me some information too. Like, he's a great guy, really easy guy to work with, super with the fans, you know, and obviously he does excellent work. But he sent me a message this morning that just said, you know, the write-up was superb. He said basically it was exactly how he remembered the history of it. And I just thought that's wonderful. Like, for all this research that I did, and obviously there's a lot of research in there that others have done as well, because it was a communal kind of research project online forever. A lot of it I did do on my own after the fact. And a lot of it I did with friends of mine, certainly people like Brian and other people like Jason, Ron, and Karsten, who we've had back and forth conversations before. But to see that, like, this culmination of just kind of theories and possibilities and screen captures and everything, and then to have somebody in the show say, yeah, mate, like, that's pretty dead on. That's pretty awesome. That was a really great feeling.
Cool. Excellent. I know, I'm looking at the Dan Walker concept art, and I'm thinking that sonic screwdriver in the middle is reminding me of something out of a Fantastic Four strip, but I'm not sure which one.
Wait, in the
concept art. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, it is interesting too when you look at those sketches, how different some of them are to the final.
Yeah.
And potentially how close they are to some other things that may have been used in the show later on, because you don't really scrap a good design, you know.
Well, that's it. So, what are your favorite things about these, and what do you like most about what has happened in the development of the sonic screwdriver?
So, I'll be honest. You and I have been fans of this show since we were kids, and it's one thing to watch something today as an adult and say, wow, that was beautiful. That's a great show. I love that prop. I love this. I love that. But there's another thing when the childhood version of you, or a child, period, latches on to a TV show or a movie and they see something that captures their imagination, because whatever it is that sparks a child's imagination is vastly different than what grabs us. So watching the show and latching on to Tom Baker's sonic screwdriver. And I'm sure that sonic screwdriver was a cool piece, a brilliant design, which I absolutely still think to this day. But I think it was made all the better by, and his acting and his characterization and his doctor and the way that he used the sonic, that just made that stick in my head and become as cool to me as most people feel lightsabers are to Luke Skywalker. I have not truly kind of had that feeling again until series 1 of Doctor Who with Christopher Eccleston and that gray Aztec hit the screen. So for me, watching the evolution of the sonic screwdrivers is just great, because my three favorite sonic screwdriver designs are Tom Baker's, the gray Aztec, as I said, which I'm going to extend to also include the David Tennant version for series 4, even though they are very different in many ways, and Paul McGann's from the TV movie. I just loved watching the evolution of those. And even the War Doctors actually kind of really captured me a lot, even though the sad story of that is that it was a toy that John Hurt had to use. But It's very, it's just very interesting and very unique because it's a very difficult design. A lot of fans over the years have tried to design their own sonic screwdrivers for their own fan films. And more often than not, and I don't mean this rudely, because it is just like, it's one of those designs that's just very hard to get a concept for that lands with everybody else in the same way. But a lot of those concepts actually end up looking like lightsabers. Mm-hmm. So for someone in the show, especially going from, when you think about it, you have John Pertwee was the first one to use that classic sonic screwdriver, the one that we always attribute to Tom Baker more so, but it was John Pertwee who used it first, ended with Peter Davison, and then they brought it back again, albeit redesigned for Sylvester McCoy and Paul McGann for the TV movie. They just kept that classic design, even though they made some changes to how it functions and some overall kind of cosmetic changes, they still kept that classic design. And then you get to the new series and Dan Walker and Russell T. Davis, they change it completely, just flip it on its head kind of thing. They go back to a design from the War Games with Patrick Troughton, where the sonic screwdriver had a lighted tip, you know, so it still had some basis in the past, but it lost the emitter ring and that kind of upright feel when using the thing. And somehow they just nailed it. They've changed it utterly from what it was, from like what we had vastly known for years, but they just nailed it. It just worked. And that's an incredible thing. So I think that's one of the things that impresses me the most and what captures me the most about it is that Dan Walker, Russell T. Davis approved, however you want to look at it, they just absolutely nailed that design. You look at it, it's a sonic screwdriver. It makes sense. You know, we get to later designs, like for instance, Matt Smith's, which is fine. It's a nice design. For me, it's a little oversized. Starts to verge a little bit onto the lightsaber territory. Has some really cool functionality with that flick to open. Didn't capture my imagination quite as much as Russell T. Davis or, you know, the classic series did, the Dan Walker designer or the classic series. But it is undeniably a sonic screwdriver. I mean, it clearly has all the points. It really married a lot with Russell's era and so on. So it's interesting to see that evolution because it's not easy, in my opinion, to get something that you say is a sonic screwdriver to actually look like a sonic screwdriver. You know, it takes a little while in some cases for it to have been used in the show before you start to go, yeah, okay, well, obviously it's a sonic screwdriver because I've watched the show for 2 years with it now versus one episode in. You're like, wow, I love this thing. That's an awesome sonic screwdriver.
Okay. You mentioned changes to it, to the RTD era sonic screwdriver.
Right.
So, and obviously we've covered a lot of different changes to the actual thing. But I mean, what changes do you think worked, and are there any that you think didn't work?
Yeah. So let's go back to the gray Aztec and like, let's take that Colony Cream Aztec wide slider change. The gray Aztec is a gorgeous design. Okay. It's the body is solid. It has a stationary button. It just looks, you know, it looks like a solid scientific kind of alien instrument, if you want, even if you think it looks humanoid because we made it, whatever. It just looks like it works. The problem with that, the Aztec design, at least the gray one, we kind of believe there's some different functionality on the cream one or some lesser functionality, was that basically you had to unscrew a slotted screw on the back of the prop at the top collar, raise the emitter head to the length that you wanted it to be, and then tighten that screw again as a retention screw to keep that emitter head in place. So if you wanted Christopher Eccleston to use it with the emitter head in the closed position, you could just give it to him solidly closed. If you wanted him to use it fully extended, you had to open it and give it to him to use. Rather than in the scene, give the actor the ability to extend it or shorten it for different functionality within the show at his will. Nice. So one of the beautiful changes was when they turned that Colony Cream Aztec into the wide slider Aztec by cutting that wide channel into the body, which in effect, in my opinion, made the piece look more like a functional prop than like an actual, you know, alien sonic screwdriver. And that's, I say that now, but I've actually come to love this prop and its look. It actually became David Tennant's most used prop in series 2, Christopher Eccleston also seemed to favor it in series one as well. But when they did that, it gave the actors that versatility. So rather than just watching the show and seeing the emitter head at a tall length, a medium length, or a closed length, you could watch them like go back to, and this is a different sonic screwdriver, but it gets the point across, but go back to The Sound of Drums, or Utopia rather, when the Doctor's trying to lock the Master out of his TARDIS, and he locks the TARDIS controls between, you know, the year 100 million or whatever and present day Earth. You actually see David Tennant slide the emitter head up in the scene, which shows that functionality that we used to have with Tom Baker and John Pertwee when they would pull the collar down to activate. And they would even use it in different ways, the classic series one. You know, you can study kind of how the actor uses the prop, which is another like really interesting thing, because David Tennant holds the prop in a different way to Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
And it's silly. It's like, why is that important? I don't know. It's a fun fact for me. You know what I mean? Like the way that they handle the prop, it's obviously it has that same functionality as the prop is meant to have in the TV show, but the way the actors hold it gives it a different stage presence as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So having that addition for the actor to have that more versatility with the prop, more settings at their own choosing during the scene, I think that was a huge and important change. For close-up shots, you could use, well, the intention was anyway, you would use the wide slider Aztec when you wanted the Doctor to kind of extend it in a scene or shorten it in a scene, but you wouldn't necessarily want to do a close-up shot of it. You'd want the close-up shot on the gray Aztec because that prop looked more finished, more beautiful. That would, in essence, be what they used to call the hero prop. Well, but they still call it a hero prop. And the wide-slider Aztec wouldn't have actually been a stunt prop, but it would have been, you know, more so for function. It would have been the prop that served a function. However, while that was the intention, the wide-slider prop got a lot of screen time. So, you know, like you do what you do when you're filming a show. You don't quite focus on those aspects. You focus on what the scene needs. So, which is great for us fans because it gave us the ability to learn more about that wide slider prop because it did get a lot of screen time, mainly because the two actors seemed to favor it.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So, I mean, we probably don't want to talk too much about what's in the guide because we want as many people to read it as possible. So far, I had some stats up earlier, and I will just I'll just check them because it was actually yesterday when I checked the stats, and I suspect it's probably a bit higher than that now. But we had around 600 downloads yesterday. Wow, not just today alone, but by yesterday. So the 2 days combined, we'd had about 600 downloads. A quick check. We're looking at so far today an additional 50. So yeah, the last 3 days we're looking at like 659 views of the article, and there's a good chance that most of those have downloaded it. So yeah, that, I mean, really well done on a comprehensive piece of work, Brian. It's really quite stunning and nicely presented as well. I wonder if you have any plans to follow this up with a look at maybe the fourth Doctor's Sonic or the 11th Doctor's device?
So, interesting. So I am actually working on a follow-up piece that's going to encompass the classic era into the TV movie. And I'm going to lump in Night of the Doctor with that as well, just because essentially the sonic screwdriver that Paul McGann used in that is an extension of the sonic screwdriver that he used in the TV movie. So I have that. I'm kind of ironing out some wording and selecting the photographs, because one thing I'll even say about the Aztec, rather the Russell T. Davis piece that I did, there's a load of helpful photographs in there that prove the points that are key on understanding the history of those sonic screwdrivers. But they're just a mere fraction of all the photographs that I have from my research with the project. They're the ones that show the key things that need people to understand this is the true history. So that's the problem with the classic sonics as well, is you want to have a good balance of information versus reference photo without overload on both ends. So like I'll never be able to use all my research photos in the articles, but the classic one, I'm literally waiting on one more photo to be able to be used. And then from there, just ironing out a couple more details that I want to just kind of maybe present a little bit better. So yeah, absolutely. There'll be a follow-up with the Classic Series 1 in time. I'm not sure if I'm going to focus so much on the Matt Smith era or the Capaldi or even Jody, because with rubber toe replicas, rubber toe props, making them officially as replicas, he did a really nice history piece on the Matt Smith Sonic screwdrivers and the Peter Capaldi one, and I'm sure he'll do one on Jody when it's already released, but or rather up for presale. But once it's officially being made, he'll do one on hers as well. So I think Nick has that covered. And if there's anything that maybe he's left out, maybe, you know, I could expand upon later. But I think Nick's doing a great job with that, so I don't really want to tread on any toes there.
Cool. Excellent. Well, it's all great. And again, really well done. And I think on behalf of Doctor Who fans everywhere, thank you for putting it together. It sets a high bar, I think, for this type of study.
Well, the thing is, I appreciate that. And the thing for me is that I am thrilled, number one, to see the positive response to this. Okay.
Sure.
My thing with being in this prop community or the Doctor Who fan community is I've always believed in share the knowledge, share the wealth kind of thing. We all want replicas of these props, or we all want to know the same information. I've never really been a big fan of the people that kind of want to hoard information and to feel special because they know something that you don't know. So I didn't know what the response was going to be, but it's been really nice to see that everybody's just really responsive to this. They're really appreciative of this. I've gotten a lot of nice messages from it, and it's really great because the research doesn't stop. You share it and somebody else may say, hey, look, here's this little piece of information that maybe you didn't know. And that already happened, actually. And it was a smaller piece of information in respect that it wasn't like a detail of the prop quite so much. It was, but it was more so about a history piece, like of and a details in the Russell T. Davis era Sonic screwdriver. It was basically just letting us know when the Runaway Bride photo shoot actually took place, which helped us pinpoint one of the changes to the prop a little bit more accurately. And I thought that was brilliant. You know, like, here I put out the research, and the very next day somebody's like, oh, look, I did my own research on these photographs that this photographer had taken. And again, more pieces fell into place. So I love that. I just love, like, the whole sharing aspect. That's been the great thing. Ever since I joined the community in 2004 for the prop world, it, with a few bumps along the way, it has been this whole share and enjoy kind of aspect. And I love that. So I'm really glad to see the response to this. And I really appreciate you saying so.
Excellent. Great. Great. There's a lot, so much more that we could talk about, but time has caught up with us, Brian. So thank you for joining us on the podcast for the K once more.
Yeah. Great pleasure.
And
thank you for having me.
Anytime, mate. Anytime. And great luck with this going forward. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Terranova. We will be back next month. I'm not sure who will be with me. It might be James, it might be Gareth, it might be both, it might be neither. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.